Good morning. Today is Wednesday, August the 19th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County 5th District Supervisor, Mr. Steve Madrone. Good morning, sir.
And good morning to you and your broad listener audience.
Well, hopefully we're not getting broader. But I do understand that that's a symptom of a little too much home time and not getting out in the community, is that we tend to be getting broader. Say it that way. Winston, you want to hit us with our why do we say that?
Let's go with this one. What is the reason we call a parsimonious person a skinflint?
Parsimonious person.
No clue.
A skinflint. No, I don't even know what a skinflint would be. Maybe somebody who sharpens their knives instead of buys new knives. How's that?
Yeah.
This is actually a pretty... You were a Cub Scout, right? Or
For 2 years, quite half a century ago.
You know, you remember what is used to make fires. Bits of flint were once used to make fires.
Right.
The rocks could be split into smaller and smaller pieces, and each piece could be used for this purpose. A skin flint was once one who, in trying to save a penny on flint, would split a piece down to its final layer, or skin.
Oh. No, there's no... There's no way I would have gotten that one ever. The flint part, yeah, it was skin that kind of threw me.
Same here. As an Eagle Scout, I did not get that one.
Oh, you stayed much longer than I did.
I did. I had to hide it from my girlfriends in high school, right? And you thought you were a nerd if you were a boy.
Oh.
But I hung in there, and my first merit badge was public speaking. How about that?
Oh, really? That's kind of cool.
Sir.
Yeah. What was your project?
12 years old. I had to go speak in front of the Chamber of Commerce at 12.
Ah.
How's that?
Okay. Well, there was probably a kind audience at that point.
It was very kind. Yes.
Yeah, perhaps not like the audiences that you're getting to deal with these days, huh? Everybody calling up?
There's some rotten produce coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff. What do you sense is going to be in 5 years when we look backwards? What do you sense some of the lessons are going to be, or some of the new approaches to the same old stuff will be?
Yeah, well, you know, with all the trouble and tribulation that the COVID-19 has caused to our economy, our health, our communities, that is a good thing to think about. What are we learning from all this, and what sorts of lessons or changes might come out of this experience? And I know for myself, you know, I may never shake hands again, you know, and I frankly really folding the hands and bowing to each other like the Eastern cultures do. It's, you know, respectful. You don't pass any germs on, kind of a nice thing. But another area that even bigger impact is this idea of, what do you do when you're sick, or what do you do when your children are sick and you don't have any sick leave, you know, and you're living hand to mouth, barely making rent and food bills each month? You know, you pretty much got to go to work sick or send your kids to school sick. So, you know, as a society, we might be thinking about that and thinking, well, if we were to find a mechanism for increased sick leave support for families, wouldn't that then help prevent disease spread and prevent economies from completely collapsing and shutting down in order to avoid a pandemic? So, you know, how do we get out in front of this? How do we do things and learn some lessons about how disease is transmitted? And certainly when we look at that particular issue, we do know that there are a lot of people who go to work sick and send their children to school sick. And so, is there a way for us to tackle that as a society and figure out a better way of doing that? And
well, looking at the numbers, Steve, let's say for simple, we've got 150,000 in Humboldt County. Okay, and what is this? This thing's, 2%, 3% positive test? Something in that neighborhood. So what's 2%? That would be 10, 3,000, 3,500 people at one time being sick with pick your favorite flu. Doesn't matter what it is, or
exactly,
you know, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, and if it's spread across a variety of different businesses, let's say the median hourly in there is $20, just to pick a figure. $300,000 a day reimbursement to businesses plus the payroll cost would probably kick it to $400,000 a day. That's a chunk of change really quick.
It is a chunk of change. Yeah, and what you have to do in any analysis like this is understand both the costs and the benefits. And so not providing that cost doesn't mean that we save all that money. In fact, we just shift that cost over onto all kinds of businesses and government by way of increasing spread of disease. And then if it's a pandemic situation, shutting down the whole economy.
Yeah, that's a whole different
cost of that.
Different level
how
there.
How many millions or billions does that cost, right? So like anything in life, I mean, having child care costs a lot of money. But does it help parents work? You know, having preschool, it costs a lot of money. But if it helps children prepare for school better, don't we save money on the other end? And so there is no free lunch, as they always like to say. And really what we have to do is ask ourselves, what are our options and what are the actual total costs of doing it versus not doing it? And I think we'll find that, you know, 999 times out of 100, prevention is going to be a lot cheaper than not preventing.
And we'll talk about that when we come back. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone, kind of waxing philosophic because we don't have the county fair to talk about this week. another change or impact of this goofiness we're experiencing. Steve, one of the challenges I would think, you know, it sounded like in the last break you're talking about the same principle of having insurance. You know, you don't know if you're going to need it, but you need to prepare for it, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I think the general public conceptually grasps it. But even something as simple as auto insurance, it got to the point where we had to legislate it because not enough people were taking it and doing
right.
it. I would hate to think that we would have to put in another layer of bureaucracy and inefficiencies in order to accomplish something that is basic behavior. You know, if you feel sick, stay at home, you know, but to have some kind of a form to accommodate those who are more in a financial situation. And I don't think it's low income necessarily. It's anybody who's leveraged out. You know, if you're making $10,000 a month and you're spending about $10,000 a month, okay, losing a week due to sickie, that's a chunky if you don't have wiggle room. So I think it's probably more of a wiggle room issue than an economic gross. But nonetheless, it's still how do we get people to anticipate that they need to plan? We need to have some allowances for this. We need to have, I guess, in government parlance, contingency funds available.
Well, you know, the whole sick leave policy in California really only came about in the last couple of years, where it was actually required by law now to provide a minimal amount of sick leave to all employees. So that's now state law. But, you know, your example of the car insurance is a good one, because the reason that it ended up ultimately being legislated is because a whole lot of people weren't getting it. And so you might have insurance, you might have paid for it, you might have done the responsible thing, but you go out, you get hit by somebody that's uninsured, and guess what? There's nobody to go to.
Your rates go up.
Because your rates go up anyway. So, you know, we were penalizing the responsible parties there, right? And I think the same thing's true with sick leave, that it's not that people that don't have sick leave want to be irresponsible and not stay home. They don't have the economic choice to do that. And, you know, $10,000 a month, boy, geez, that's $120,000 a year. That's definitely not low income or even moderate.
No, no. But if your commitments are at a certain level, I mean, it could be $1,000. Yeah. It doesn't matter what the number is. I just was grabbing a figure.
Well, the difference is at $10,000 a month, you can afford child care or somebody come into the home, you know, or whatever. But at $1,000 or $2,000 a month, there's no way you can afford any of those things. So you go to work sick. Your kids go to school sick. So, you know, we can keep doing that, and the results are that disease is going to spread rapidly. Always has. But when one comes along that's going to kill people in large numbers, like COVID, then suddenly we've got to shut everything down. So we either do that, or we increase the ability of people to be able to stay home when they're sick. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know what we're doing now is not working.
Right. Now, I suppose that's the magic is, okay, I think this fall, I think the cities where they have the jurisdiction of having the either continuation of the sales tax or increasing the sales tax is really going to be very difficult because everybody's kind of paying attention to what's going on economically. So something like this, which may be well grounded in positive thought and that side of the equation,
right.
Who wants to pay for more? And you can't just point to the business and say, okay, business, you now have got the responsibility because it's, you know, your milk is going to go up and your lettuce is going to go up if you pass it on.
Right.
I mean, it just, that's how the game gets played. So it's kind of an interesting little exercise to try to figure out some of these various elements. And it is a
difficult one, and I think you make a valid point that should the burden be placed on small business, you know, who are already struggling tremendously with trying to make ends meet, or is this a societal cost? And of course then we get into using that S word, you know, socialism or whatever. And I always find it interesting talking with people that will say, oh, I can't support that, that's socialism. And I thought, well, wait a minute. What are police services? What are road services? What are public schools and libraries? Aren't those all social services? Aren't those all socialism? You know, people like to think that in America, we are just a purely capitalistic, free enterprise country, but that doesn't exist anywhere. Everywhere is a mixture of things, and America is no different. We have capitalism, free enterprise, but we also have socialism, and it's well embedded probably ever since, you know, 1930s and the Depression, if not before. And so there are certain things like maybe sick leave that really is probably a societal cost that we as a society might think, you know, that's worth happening. If that can reduce the potential for shutting down our entire economy in pandemics and other bad disease spread, maybe it's worth that preventative approach to doing it, and shouldn't we support that as a whole? Well, then that becomes a social program, you know, rather than trying to put the burden on individual small businesses.
Or so, should we at least have discussion? And it's interesting for me considering, and you guys deal with a lot of workshops and seminars and educations and meetings and stuff, who shows up and who doesn't.
That's right.
Whose opinions are expressed, and what about the 95% that never even think about attending? How do you tap into that group? And I suppose that's as much of a challenge as anything anymore, as everybody's told to stay at home, stay away, don't get close, don't touch, no high fives, no handshakes. It's like, humanity, just...
Yeah, none at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you participate in Zoom as a public member? I mean, you know, as a panelist for the board or whatever, we're all up there, you know, the Hollywood stars. Brady Bunch boxes up there, whatever, right? Depends on what your age group is what your reference is.
All right, but, Greg, take it easy then. We'll figure out where Marcia is when we come back. It's 8:30.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. If you see a down power line, stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokeybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service, Ad Council, and your state forester.
With Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone, Talk Shop presented by Baywood Golf and Country Club, by Murphy's Market, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, REDEC, and CDH Painting. Steve, looking at some of the different challenges we were talking about before the break about getting together and seeing people and whatnot, we've also got the Democratic Convention, and I'll just kind of put that one in quotes right now, happening this week with all the not really having a convention. The Republicans are going to have their not real convention. We're experiencing not real baseball and a bunch of things like that. I guess not real basketball either. It is interesting for me to kind of project out a little bit and go, okay, so we're doing this and we may be safe, but are we a society? Are we people?
Yeah.
Are we what we want to be, or is this something that we're just kind of doing because we're being told to, or kind of following the leader, so to speak? And is it accomplishing the goal? I don't know if it, you know, I don't know the answers to any of that kind of stuff. But as you're looking around you and people are, you know, getting frustrated, business operators are getting more and more concerned about whether or not they're going to be able to survive, what kind of sense do you read, either out of the Fifth or as somebody just as part of the community that gets a lot of that kind of pointed commentary? What is your read right now?
you know, people are frustrated and stressed, burned out, all those terms you could use. I think the hardest part for all of us is the unknown. You know, they're not knowing, well, how long is this going to go on, and when's it going to end, and how are we going to adjust, and is this our new future, that we're going to have more and more of these kinds of, you know, virulent diseases that come along that are hard to control. You know, it's been the subject matter of many sci-fis and thrillers for a long, long time on TV, and so here we are in the middle of this thing. I frankly never quite imagined anything quite like this. I don't know about you, but
it just is a theoretical exercise. You know, it's like, okay, what was the bubonic plague like?
Yeah, right.
Well, I would have done da 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 da. Yeah, well, okay, yeah. You know, 500 years experience afterwards, you're going to have a little bit of different insight than the folks that were dealing with what technology was at that point.
There was a lot of opportunity for improvement because people were throwing their doo-doo out the window.
They're everything, the, yes.
Yeah, maybe we can make some improvements here.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is a lot different. We've had, you know, serious sewage disposal systems and other kinds of things for a long, long time, you know, and food handling and refrigeration and so many different things that have really, you know, prevented a lot of these mass diseases from wiping out, you know, whole swaths of people and stuff.
But, well, and antibiotics, you know, and some of those types of things also.
It.
Yeah.
It created super diseases, you know, because we kill off the easy bugs and then other ones mutate and come back around, you know.
That's a school of thought with this thing, too, is that by not allowing it to kind of run its course naturally, whatever the mutations are, that there won't be the antibodies that in a critical mass of society, and whatever it is that comes back is going to come back even nastier.
Yeah, the whole idea of the herd immune, you know, let it go and then everybody gets it and some people die and then you move on and your population's stronger because of it. There's certainly all of that stuff and definitely tricky to apply. Okay, we're going to just let all the old people die. It's just the way it is, you know. So I don't know. It's certainly not an easy thing, and I haven't heard any great answers or solutions out there other than trying to adapt. I mean, there are a lot of people that are growing tremendous victory gardens this summer. You know, the amount of food being grown has increased dramatically at local households, if you got the room, the space, the water, you know.
Oh, don't forget the ability. We've killed more plants this year than we did last year.
You gotta have a green thumb. Come on. Brian, where's your green thumb, buddy?
Yeah, well, it's jaundice thumb right now.
Yeah, but, you know, there are bright spots that way. And, you know, for people with more hands on their time, either they're finding it to be an amazing thing to reconnect with their children, their sweethearts, their spouse, or whatever, and making good with that, or they're tearing each other up and at each other's throats and, you know, and just in a horrible situation. And I guess it's a true test, you know, as human beings, how we behave, you know, and stuff. But if you've lost your job, your business is on, you know, you're losing your business, all that kind of stuff, it's pretty hard to put a bright light on any of this and see much hope, you know.
Don't tell me how to spend my free time trying to figure out how to, you know, keep the doors open. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So I don't mean any disrespect there. It's just, I know that it's very difficult for many people. And there is help out there, you know, through various programs and stuff that people should seek out. I know it doesn't solve all the problems for everybody, but there is help. But we can only print money so long, right?
Exactly. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, you talked about some of the positive lessons, some of the good stuff, things that might change. Do you see anything process-wise, protocol-wise, how government might learn from this and either not have to have as many meetings or not have to travel as much or maybe just do things in a different manner?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. You know, before this, I think there's always been kind of a widespread opinion that allowing employees to work from home is fraught with all kinds of waste and lack of supervision and accountability, and that if you give people that ability to do that, they're just going to goof off, waste time, and not get anything done. But as we know with most jobs, they're easily accountable you know, yardsticks, milestones that you can look at and go, well, you made 2 phone calls today. You had 8 hours, 4 hours of phone call, excuse me, but what were you doing? You know?
Right, right.
And I think what we're really finding is that fear, while it may be valid in some situations with some individuals, I know most people that I talk to are incredibly responsible and find that being able to work from home, they're actually more productive. Now, clearly, you have to have good internet, good phone system, and the ability to separate yourself in the home from the kids running around or this or that or whatever. Because when you're at home, there's a little less respect. Hey, knock on the door, you know, interruptions and all that. But I know for myself, that's a couple hours a day of less travel that I can put into my work. And I'm finding myself to be more productive, actually, being able to work from home instead of driving into Eureka every day.
Well, that's
but I've got good phone, good internet.
Yeah, that's part of...
I think we're seeing that, you know?
For me, the commute time is kind of thinking time also.
Yeah.
Either decompressing or getting fired up or just... You know, the quiet time, forced quiet time, and whether it's hearing something that spurs an idea from what we're listening to on the air, or if it's just kind of seeing something. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, reading the billboard.
Part of me is, or my challenge is, not getting out as much, COVID and then also this knee thing. I don't feel as connected to the community because I don't know what's going on. Driving by and seeing a new construction project or street painting or now open sign or just that kind of stuff. Just not knowing the pulse as well as I would like to, and as well as we used to.
I would agree.
It's different. Part. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just different, I think, rather than necessarily better. But I suspect that if you have a pile of work to do, and that pile can get to you, and you can be more efficient at home, I don't think any employer is going to say, no, we need to have you here, because we judge you by your work product, your output at the end of the day. Pretty straightforward stuff. Right. But if you're in the people business, that's different. You know, if you are a counter worker and you're trying to help people, let's say, get building plans taken care of, that one's a different kettle of worms.
Yeah, you got to be looking at the maps and details, all that, so it's variable, but there is some bright spots there where people are reinventing their work and themselves, and employers are trying to figure out how to keep things going, and that creativity is just amazing to me, to watch how people will just take on that challenge and figure it out. That's the good stuff, but not everybody is able to adapt their business so easily, and those are the ones that are really struggling, I mean, restaurants, not the time to invest in a new restaurant, probably, right?
Yeah, well, and even there, seeing some of the creativity, I mean, those folks tend to be pretty darn creative just naturally, so I would think that, that there's some amazing things that they're being able to arrive at and develop. For me, the really interesting one is the retailers that can't get product. The demand is there, the foot traffic is there, they just can't get product. That's a whole different dynamic because they're not in the manufacturing business. So we'll see how this thing plays out. You guys go. I presume that your vacation or days away from the shop are being spent working actively rather than recreating this year.
The phone calls, the emails, they don't stop.
Well, that's now your vacation. Enjoy it, sir. All right. Thanks for coming by, Steve.
You bet. Take care, Brian.
Talk to you in a bit. Hang in there. Bye-bye. And see everybody tomorrow.